Hey guys, welcome to episode 39 of the JV Club with the marvelous Janie Haddad Tompkins. Again, guys, it's somebody that I've been talking to about doing the podcast forever. We are buddies, we adore each other, and we were finally able to make our schedules align. I am overjoyed. Janie was somebody that many of you wrote to me and said would love to have Janie as a guest on your podcast. So listen, we made it happen. We aim to please. Speaking of aim to please, I'm very excited because the first episode of Neil's Puppet Dreams, which is the project I co-created, co-wrote, co-produced with Neil Patrick Harris, David Burka, The Henson Company, Nerdist, and Michael Serrato and Brian Clark came out today. Today is Tuesday, the 27th. And the first episode called The Lullaby is out. You can go to the Nerdist YouTube channel. I encourage you strongly to subscribe and check it out. And then there's also a great behind the scenes sort of trailer floating around that I really love and am proud of, and you can kind of get a sense of all the different people who worked on the project. So please check that out. It's been such an amazing, fun labor of love, and it really is very much a dream come true. You know, when we were shooting it at the Henson Studios at one point when, actually with this particular episode, I wrote that lullaby, and when the puppeteers were all, you know, lip syncing it and we were shooting the footage, I got really emotional and I had to leave for a second because I was so excited and moved that I had anything to do with the Henson Company puppeteers, you know, making words come out of their mouths. So that was awesome. Hopefully you guys will check it out. Now let's get back to you. Shout outs to, from Facebook, Corinne MacGyver, emails, Allison B, Andrew R, Sasha, Veronica C, Salam, Sam, Paige, Lucy, on Facebook, Robert C, Jeffrey F, on iTunes, Death Cab 77. Listen, nobody's going to argue with a Death Cab for Cutie reference. Great band. Chana BC Smith, Micah Rafferty, Spasmo, World's Tallest Mike, Jeffrey Kunkel. Oh, I just said your whole name. Sorry, Jeffrey. Ian O, Sicky Seven, Gudo, Super XM, 1KE, Chef Man 10, Lou K04, and NYC Father of Three. Nothing like iTunes handles, guys, to really create tongue twisters for you during your morning. I think that's it, except for one last thing. And by the way, thanks to Stephanie for helping me out with the iTunes feedback. And then, you know, I've gotten some lovely stories, some lovely dinner party stories. I'm going to let's set a deadline for maybe December 8th, because that is the day of Tess's book signing. Let's set a date of December 8th. If you can get me a story before December 8th, we'll choose one and send a book out. And you know what? Maybe we'll choose more than one. We're very generous of spirit. Okay, guys, that is a really long intro for me, but I wish you all well. I can't wait to hear from you and talk to you soon. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
First time this has happened. This morning, I'm just going to level with you. I enjoy coloring my hair, guys. I'm a natural blonde. I enjoy a strawberry. I was coloring my hair this morning. I was 100% sure that, and I put it in my phone, that Janie was coming at 11 o'clock, so 10 o'clock in the morning on a beautiful Sunday day. I was in the shower rinsing the hair dye out of my hair at 10 o'clock sharp when my guest rang my doorbell. The dogs went crazy. My gentleman friend had to let her in, and I had to come out and apologize. I got the time wrong, guys. It's my first time it's happened. I gotta say, I'm so relieved that it was Janie that it happened with, because she is a generous, kind, warm human being who I felt comfortable having my head wrapped in a towel greeting when I came out.
Well, that's nice to hear. I can verify the truth of all of everything that was just said. So
yeah,
it happened.
I don't even think we need to bring a notary into this. We don't even need a notary in this situation. And nice. Janie immediately said, yes, my worst fear is that I'm going to be in the middle of dyeing my hair and there will be like an earthquake or
totally.
Something.
Or like the fire alarm will go off and then you're stuck with hair dye on your hair for like 3 hours and then all of your hair falls out.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of those things I've thought about. And I've also thought about, like, I mean, I don't know. This is getting super personal right away, but like sometimes what I'm sleeping in isn't necessarily the thing that I would want to be like running around in an earthquake for either.
No.
And so I've thought about that too. Like, oh, if something were to happen and this is what I have on when I have to like grab everything I own and run
and
away.
And the shoeless thing.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, there's a fire and I'm outside in shoes and boxers.
Yeah. Which, like, have you even really been in enough emergencies that like
no, knock
these,
on wood.
Where are these worries coming from? We're both knocking on wood. Where are these weird like emergency disaster fantasies coming from when
know.
We haven't really
that
experienced
is
a, that?
I don't know. It's just a permanent neuroses that exists in the part of my brain or something. Yeah.
I mean, you are kind of, I guess there's a little bit of that in LA for earthquakes and stuff.
Yes.
And obviously like people who've on the East Coast who have to deal with more storms.
Yeah. There's Sandy,
like Sandy and
yep.
stuff. But it seems like there's a difference between like an incoming storm and everyone sort of knowing storm preparedness
involved.
And like tornado watch and all that kind of stuff.
And an earthquake.
Versus, yeah, we pick the place to live where the threat is immediate.
Totally.
There's no way to predict it.
Yes. Like a meteor hitting the earth.
Like a meteor. Like a meteor from the inside of the earth exploding
coming out. And I, like most Californians, I have a little earthquake preparedness kit, which I've never even looked at. It's like in it.
At least you have that, because I'm not sure I can say that that's true for me. I think I just have a bunch of jumbled junk in the garage.
Yeah, well,
counts.
I mean, I order one online. I don't even know if it would be helpful. But then there's the fear of like, oh, what if I'm in my car, like on the 101? You know, I don't have bottles of water in my car.
I don't either.
You know? I mean, what am I going to do? At least I won't be dyeing my hair. But
I do a lot of my hair dyeing in the car, too. So that's...
I mean, I am from the South, and I mean, I could go somewhere with curlers in my hair. That would not be crazy.
like a Steel Magnolias moment of curlers and maybe like a beautiful, like, tissue-y scarf.
Yeah, going from one place to the next and then pulling them out in the... Like on your way.
Oh, I love this. I love this woman. Who
checking
has the
up
moxie.
In the rear view mirror.
Yes.
You know, just like.
Are you driving a convertible? And are you? And do
I
you
wish.
Have like cat eye sunglasses?
Yes, I need that.
Are
I need
we
all
in
of
the
that.
1950s?
Yes. Yes.
I love everything that's happening.
Like the movie Shag, which I would love to remake.
Wait, what? I don't know if I've seen Shag. Uh-oh. I know.
Bridget Fonda and Phoebe Cates.
I don't think I've seen it.
Oh my God.
But I do have a soft spot for both of those fine
don't
ladies.
You? But I'm like obsessed with remaking the movie and being in it. You can be in it too.
What is
you can play the Bridget Fonda.
Oh, listen, I could do it in a heartbeat.
They're in South Carolina and there's like a shagging contest. Shagging is like the state dance.
Shagging is not what it is in Austin Powers, is what you're telling me.
That's true. It's not the same. It might lead to that.
It's not having casual sex.
I mean,
casual, playful sex.
I think from what I understand about shagging, and I can only fake my way through it, is it's basically like the jitterbug, but it's done to like beach music.
Okay.
Yeah. You know that song, I Love Beach Music? It's like that kind of music.
Yes.
I don't know.
Right?
Or Carolina Girl. I'm
beach music.
Now I'm going back
like,
in time.
No.
Well, that's
beach
West
music?
Coast beast music.
Oh, I don't.
This is a
I
different thing on the East Coast.
I don't know if I know what East Coast beach music sounds like.
Well, I'll have to send you. I'll send you a mix.
I can't believe I'm getting a shag mix out of all this.
You need to brush up because we're doing the remake.
I know. Listen, I have a lot of research to do. I can't believe how far behind
we're doing
I am
the
in
remake.
This movie I committed to.
Oh yeah. And by the way, we're too old for the roles. Because I think it's like the summer after their high school. It's like, I think it's the summer before their freshman.
And you and I both just graduated from college, so you're right.
So
we're too
old. Just a little beyond.
Yeah.
Just a little beyond. But
so it's basically, our version will be Thelma and Louise meets the movie Shag, because we fall in between those two age groups.
You know what? I love this idea. I think we can pitch this.
Yeah.
We don't even have to remake it. We'll do a whole new reboot.
Yeah. Okay, so do we shoot anyone, or is that we don't have to go like drive off a canyon cliff at the end?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, is that good filmmaking? Because I'm not good at screenplay writing, but maybe. Thelma and Louise was bigger than Shag, so I think we do shoot someone.
Okay, so we definitely shoot someone. We definitely drive off a canyon. You don't think anybody's going to make the comparison to Thelma and Louise?
They might, but there's going to be dancing in it, and that is going to keep it.
The dancing's going to distract everybody. No one is going to realize that we basically ripped off Thelma and Louise.
Yeah, I think so.
This is going to be great. North Carolina?
South Carolina.
Damn. I could have. You know why? Because they're this similar. Is because some. And sometimes you go to North Carolina. Have you never even gone to North Carolina?
I have a lot of friends from North Carolina. No, I go back to South Carolina.
You always go back to South Carolina.
Yeah.
God damn it.
However.
This is the thing. My mom was born in North Carolina.
Okay.
And my grandfather is also born in North Carolina. No, my mom was born in San Francisco. My grandfather was born in North Carolina. My mom grew up in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
So I always get confused.
So have you gone to North Carolina?
No. Because no one's there anymore. They all moved to Arizona.
Okay.
When my mom was a teenager.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But my mom has gone back. She's made a couple of like really great trips through the South because my mom, my grandfather was a Marine.
Okay.
So they moved around a lot.
Oh, that makes sense.
So she grew up until she was a freshman in high school. She was on a base in North Carolina.
Okay.
And then they moved. I think they were like in Atlanta for a little bit and then Phoenix.
Okay.
So with one of her sisters, actually maybe with both of her sisters, she did like a little like revisit the pocket where they lived.
Yeah, I love that.
And saw some old family members that like are so distantly removed from me and my experience with my family that it wouldn't really, I don't know them, but
you wouldn't have met them before.
My mom reconnected with some of them and
that's cool.
And had a really great experience. And I really do want to go. I would love to go to either of the Carolinas.
Oh yeah. when we shoot our movie.
When we shoot our movie,
we will shoot on location.
So where in South Carolina is everybody?
Charleston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Charleston.
Yeah. That's where I grew up.
Charleston, by the way, is also a dance. It has nothing to do with either beach
that
music, shagging, or the jitterbug.
It's a 1920s.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if there is a connection. I don't know.
No reason we shouldn't set this whole thing in the 20s.
I know. Sorry.
Boardwalk enjoy 20s attire.
Boardwalk Empire meets
Thelma and Louise meets yes.
Thelma and Louise. It's getting.
This is going to be
juicy.
Huge.
TV execs, I know you're listening.
Make bathtub gin.
I know you're listening.
And have
listening.
To go on the run. Two-way dance contest.
And there aren't any like female bootleggers from that whole Prohibition thing. So it would be kind of cool to have a show or a series where we play female.
Ooh, I love this.
Right? I mean.
Oh, man.
Where does the dancing
a lot
happen?
Of work
the
to
dancing's got to happen.
The dancing definitely has to happen. Maybe we open up some sort of a club.
I'm thinking Showtime because HBO already has.
They've got theirs.
So we're going to write our feature. We're going to have our
Janie,
series.
We are monumental successes.
Listen, Hollywood, are you listening? Are you?
I hope so. I can only assume that Hollywood listens to this podcast. I can only assume.
Pull up a chair, take some notes, call us after.
This is going to be huge. This is going to be huge.
I love it.
I've got to go to Charleston. I'm very upset that I've never been. I couldn't go to your wedding.
Oh, no. That was
I think I was shooting in. You know what the irony is? I'm pretty sure. Whatever I was shooting, I probably was shooting in Atlanta.
Yeah, and you probably could have hopped
I was
up on
so
it.
Close.
What
a bunch
you.
Of BS. Did you spend your whole childhood into like college years and then go to college somewhere else and then move? Or
I spent my coming of age years in South Carolina. My early childhood was in West Virginia.
Okay.
That's where I was born, and my parents divorced in 1980, and then we moved to Charleston, my mom and brother and my mom. And so I spent my entire grade school, high school, and college years there because I ended up at the University of South Carolina for undergrad.
Okay.
And then I moved away when I went to grad.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what was so in Charleston, it was always Charleston?
Yeah, Charleston, and then college was in Columbia, which was 2 hours away.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's Charleston like? Will you paint a picture for those of us who haven't been there?
I mean, am I painting the picture of my formative years there? Because it's a little different now.
I would paint the picture of... Yeah, let's paint the picture of Charleston in your formative
years.
Okay,
my formative... Okay, because
This might be the most I've ever said formative years in one podcast. I'm loving it. It gave a quiet dignity to my podcast.
You can change the name to formative years. All right. I grew up on an island called Sullivan's Island, which is a barrier island. Several of them exist around Charleston. I don't know.
What do you mean by barrier island?
Terrible about geography. Well, okay, because Charleston, the city, is a peninsula. It looks like a miniature Manhattan almost. Like,
okay.
Although Manhattan's an island and Charleston's connected, so it's a peninsula. And on all three sides of it that jut out into the ocean, there are these little islands that dot around it. And they're called barrier islands because they, I guess, protect
well,
the edge.
Well, that was my question, like I was just wondering if it was, if barrier islands was like a geographical natural description, or if it was like called a barrier island because of the, military
bases. Yeah. Well, I don't know because I think both in a weird way, because it protect from like storms,
yeah,
or something, but also like the island I grew up on, there's a Fort Moultrie was okay.
There you go.
And that was, I think, the Revolutionary War, not the Civil War. I don't know.
And
I'm
did you
really
say,
bad at history, and I'm really
too.
Bad at geography.
I
and I feel like,
please, I am too.
Going to expose it all, but that's okay.
It's totally okay. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? No,
no,
I'm not.
No.
I know that to be resoundingly true.
Even in fifth grade, I wasn't.
So. Even in fifth grade. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Sullivan's Island?
So, Sullivan's Island
God,
is where.
I couldn't love. Come on.
Yeah. Okay.
How
Sullivan's
awesome
Island is what is the reason it's different now for a lot of reasons, but because I grew up in the '80s, just going to put it out there. It was the '80s, guys. Some of you probably weren't born then, but it happened.
Doesn't mean it wasn't there.
It was a
Doesn't
decade
mean they weren't
that
there.
Actually happened. And
yes.
There was fluorescent clothing and gummy bracelets.
What a joy.
And, but I grew up in the '80s there. And, there's this interesting, weird connection, nostalgia for that time period in that place and time. Like so much so there's like a Facebook page that's like, I grew up in the '80s on Sullivan's. I mean,
really?
Yeah. And like, it's bizarre, but it was a kind of like this magical jungly kind of remote place. There was only one bridge that connected it to the mainland at the time. It was a drawbridge. Sometimes the drawbridge would get stuck open and you'd be stuck on the island.
This is awesome.
Yeah. And so, and it was like this place that was, it was even like kind of separate from Charleston in a way, because there were the people that lived in downtown Charleston and they were like fancy society people. And then the people that lived in Mount Pleasant and Sullivan's Island and Isle of Palms were like more fringe, like suburban people that,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't, there were different rules, I guess, you know. And,
like you could drive around with curlers in your hair on Sullivan's
Oh,
Island.
You like would bike around with, yeah, yeah. You would drive around with curlers. You wouldn't do that in downtown Charleston because.
Never. I declare.
Exactly.
Oh, there it is. I got 13 minutes in before I had to do some sort of weird Southern thing.
I love it. Yeah. So that was like a frozen moment in time.
A Facebook page
specifically
to that era.
Yeah, for that era and that place. But
I
now.
I gotta go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have to link to that Facebook page on the JV Club
but
Facebook
now
page.
It's a different place. I mean, it's become very inhabited. It wasn't very inhabited then. It was like a bunch of like shacky beach houses. Like my mom and stepdad rented.
What drew them out to Sullivan's Island?
I think, my mom, when she divorced my dad, like her dream was to live by the beach. Like that was, she loved the ocean. Like she just, I don't know, like we moved to South Charleston, South Carolina, just also because she got transferred there with her job, but she wanted to be near the ocean. And it's totally different than West Virginia, which is completely landlocked and covered in mountainous, you know, it's rugged there.
Yeah.
And so that was what drew my mom. And then my stepdad, He had bought a house there with his wife, like in the '70s for like $2 or something.
I know. Remember when people bought houses
for $2, two blocks from the beach?
Oh.
Yeah, and no, I'm not kidding. It was like $35,000.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and my stepbrother lives in that house today with his wife and kids.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and it's I'm sure like worth a gazillion dollars.
Please, yeah.
Yeah, just because of the look. But like, it was like it's an uninhabited, jungly place. And I think that was what drew people there. And it was cheap. I mean, We rented this huge, like, 4 or 5 bedroom beach house, like, 2 blocks from, I think my mom said they paid like $400 a month or something. And now cool. That same house, like, was on the market for like 1.6 million.
Of course. Of course it was. Was it, did you have air conditioning and stuff, or was it like really hot?
Yeah, we had air conditioning. We did. It wasn't amazingly effective, but the beach house that we lived in for a lot of those years had a lot of, porch and French doors and, you know, fans and stuff like that. So and also, like, closer to the ocean, there's a little bit of a breeze, you know, but it is hot and humid. I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
I mean, did you have any kind of sense then that what you're describing, I mean, I know that you know, because you're a you know, poetic, artistic person, that you what nice. You're describing is so lovely. But when you're a kid, you have any or a teenager, do you have any sense of that? Or did you have a sense of, like, or were you just like, this is my normal life, this is what I do here, and, like, this is what makes me impatient about it, but this is what I like about it. You know what I mean?
I don't know, because what's interesting is when I look back on that time, I think I had a sense of it, but I don't know if that's just me imposing an adult projecting knowledge. Back. Yeah, because there was, like, a real drama to it at the time. And I don't even think it was just strictly adolescent drama. I think it was the drama of the place, because this place has an energy about it, like, has a history to it. I mean, Charleston in and of itself has a history, like the peninsula part too. I mean, it is a place that's kind of frozen in time. Like, there is a historical society that preserves the skyline and the, you know, the antebellum home, you know, all that. So there is a bit of feeling like you're on a movie set all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and just the breezes and the smells of the marsh and all of that. So I think I was aware.
Yeah.
I think.
How was it? Because people talk about the Carolinas being sometimes more liberally minded or more accepting than some of the others of the South. And so was there any of that at all? Or was it a very conservative community? Were there, like, gay kids where you went to high school or anything? You know what I mean? Was anybody allowed to be out?
This is what is kind of true about it. It is, at least on Sullivan's, where I grew up, there were some liberally minded people. I mean, like, people that I'm still friendly with today. And, like, they're on Facebook, like, Obama, you know, whatever. However, in general, even Charleston, which was a blue county the first Obama election, but I'm not sure. It is very segregated. And it is, and it's all class. Like, it's like there's an upper class and a poor class, and the middle class. I mean, now the middle class is kind of growing more, just anywhere in America, based on the recession, right, or whatever, you know. But it's super segregated. I mean, there are parts of the city. I mean, there was, like, a black part, and then below this one street, like, the white part, you know. Mm-hmm. And you still see that today, like, when you drive around. So I think there are liberally minded people there, but it's an old city with a lot to change over time, like hundreds of years of thought.
Sure.
That it's hard to reverse. But sure. There are there were a lot of gay people growing up. I mean, like, well, because I always studied theater and stuff, so I had that. In Columbia, it was a little bit more prevalent, like, in the theater community and stuff like that. But there was, like, also, like, a lot of, I think, like, gay men that were, like, super femmy, like, old Charleston men, but that are married.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, like, there's, like, a Southern archetype of that sort of, like, you know, the nice
seersucker
suit and the whiskey and the, you know, but sort of a femininity there. I don't know. That's
so easy for me to picture. I think you're right. There is an archetype, because I immediately know
there's
what
a major archetype.
About.
So I think there's some old families that probably have those, like, skeletons in the closet mm-hmm. that never came out. But I think, you know, just like anywhere, as years go on, things become a little more progressive. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the island like? Was it like there's a main street on the island with, like, little shops and stuff?
Sort of.
So you didn't just have to, obviously, if the drawbridge was up, then.
Yeah, there was a main street with little shops. Like, there was this place called Burt's Bar, and everyone would be like, if it hurts, go to Burt's. There was, like, a little corner store. You know, there was this place called Gruber's, and there's all this mythology attributed to that time. Like, Mr. Gruber, like he obsessively counted your change, like, and that was just like known on the island. There was another little store called Rouse's that had our video games, like where we'd get off of like the school bus and all the boys would like play video games there, and they sold those like quarter candies in the boxes, you know, like lemon yes. heads and Boston baked beans.
Yes.
So we'd buy candy after school, like that kind of
hot,
thing.
Maybe even a hot tamale.
Oh yeah, hot tamale. Yeah. Atomic Fireballs.
Yeah. Mike and Ike's.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep.
I love
so
it.
So there is that, but now like that whole strip, if you will, is like restaurants and bars, and it's become like built up.
Gotcha.
And it's crowded all the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but it used to just be like that, just serve the local.
And so did you, so was the high school on Sullivan's Island, or did you go?
No,
into,
I went.
So you did. You
went, I went Charleston. Downtown. Yeah, I would drive downtown. Or first, I drove with my brother. Rode with my brother who could drive. And then, yeah. So I drive every day. I drive that drive every day. I could do it in 15 minutes.
And
I knew exactly like how to get there. And
I love that you said you can do it in 15 minutes, as if I would be like,
anyone
normally
would
it takes 30 minutes.
Anyone
you
would know. Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's a 20. Okay. So I'm understanding that 15 minutes is a good amount of time to take it. I mean, if it was a 5-minute drive for most people, that would mean something different if you could do it in 15
and
minutes.
And it was fun going to school downtown, because there were like those downtown kids, like they all, you know, had these big old homes, and like sometimes you'd go there after school, and these are like homes that are like built in the 1800s and stuff, you know, but it was just, I don't know, it was very romantic.
These are like the wealthier kids, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Like, some of them were wealthier, and some of them just like inherited into that and might not, and like might've been middle class, but just they were born into that neighborhood or whatever.
And where did you fit in the kind of social culture? I know you said you were doing theater and stuff.
I fit in. I was sort of like, I had my brothers, and so, like I knew all of those guys or whatever, like the older guys.
So you have one older brother. You have two older brothers?
I have an older biological brother and another older stepbrother from my mom's marriage.
Okay.
And then,
yeah, because when you said you guys moved, you said you and your brother, and then I got confused when you said you have another brother.
Well, see, my mom remarried the summer before my 8th grade year. And we inherited a stepbrother from that. And then my father remarried when I was 17. And she has two sons as well.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't grow up with them, as it were, because
they stayed in West
everyone's
Virginia.
Older. Or? Yeah. They live other places, but they grew up in West Virginia.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So there were always boys in my house, like always, because of the two older brothers.
Yeah.
Between my brother and my stepbrother. And just socially, I think, you know, I was just, I was friends with a lot of different groups. Like I've always been that way. Like even now in Hollywood, mm-hmm. I feel like I have like a lot of different pockets of friends from different, crowds, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I always like moved in and out of all of them. I want to say it's because I'm malleable, but I don't think that's what it is. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Interesting.
Because I don't think I change who I am when I'm with different groups.
Yeah.
I think I just like, I've been always kind of like spongy.
You're terribly likable.
Well, thank you. I think I'm just spongy. You know, like I just like to absorb people's mm-hmm. energies. Like I've always kind of like sucked that in. Like that's
I get
always
that.
Bit.
I think I'm similar, actually.
Yeah, I think you are
totally,
too.
Yeah.
Actually.
I would rather almost not have a sense. I feel like I've envied the sense of belonging that I see other people have with very specific social groups that they stay inside of.
Yes, I know I have.
But at the same time, we're making the choice not to sort of affiliate ourselves so strongly with one that we have a place in that way.
Yes, because
I do like sort of, I don't like, I think as much as I envy that, I also feel like hemmed in by it
so
in some
do
way.
I.
And I have an impatience about
100%
that.
100% relate to everything you're saying right now. Like I feel like I almost need to have that variety, not variety, but, or just like, I don't know. It's like a curiosity maybe about humanity.
Yeah.
That I hope I have, or I'd like to have, or cultivate, or continue to have.
Yeah. I feel the same.
Yeah. So I kind of moved in between groups. Now that's not to say that I didn't have like my tight girlfriends or whatever, because I did. But even then, like even they would say like, oh, I can't believe you're going to so-and-so's party, like whatever. And I'm like, it's like a, someone I knew since I was in fourth grade or something. You know what I mean? So I just kind of always maintained, which is also why I think I like social networking too, because you can have that spectrum of people like in your field of vision on a daily basis. Yeah. And you can just kind of like draw in from it, like what people are up to. And I find it fascinating.
I think that makes perfect sense. I absolutely understand that. And I do think that there is something that people hunger for. You know, we talk a lot on the podcast about the sort of like parallels between being teenagers and kind of being where we are in our lives here and now. And I don't know, it was funny. Someone said something, I don't think they said it on my podcast, but a recent podcast guest, I think after, I think it was Kathleen actually, was saying that she feels like something about like the sort of amorphous 30s, people in their 30s, because that's the majority of people that I've had on the podcast, early to late 30s, but also late 20s, that there's something about this period that feels like it's more connected to your adolescence than your 20s felt, or than what she thinks her 40s are going to feel like. Like she thinks somehow that like if there's a way that you like leapfrog over times so that like maybe you feel closer to being like 10 when you're in your 20s, but you feel close. I don't know. She made some interesting associations, but social media feels like that a little bit somehow too, like that you would like the age that we are from, the generation that we are from, is like it's prime for us to sort of have this thing that's closest to your teenagerhood that in your 20s wasn't really developed yet.
No.
So now we really are speaking specifically to a certain age group, but it does feel like Facebook and all that kind of stuff came around before, like at a time when we can reconnect with like, oh my God, this almost feels like high school, where I sort of like am in touch with a bunch of different people.
I totally agree.
And I sort of have a sense of what's going on. There are different social groups that I'm tied into.
And also I think that resonates too, because in your 20s, I feel like things go haywire, at least in my 20s. Like,
yeah, my 20s were kooky.
My 20s were like, oh, that was not who I was or something, you know? Like.
Well, it's really interesting you would say that too, so specifically about that's not who I was, because that was sort of the period of time in which I took the biggest break from this, from like what I thought what I spent my time thinking I wanted to grow up and do.
Me too.
Then suddenly became like, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. I'm not going to do it for any number of reasons. And so
it's a major period of self-doubt.
It's a major period of self-doubt. And yeah. And
it's a rite of passage to get to where you're supposed to be, I think. But
because it wasn't until my late 20s that all of a sudden everything started to reshape itself.
Yeah.
And did I ended up going, I'm closer now to like the version of myself I expected when I was 7. There was like a huge period of time, like 10 years between like 18 and 27 or something.
A complete loss.
Of complete sort of like, going in a completely different direction. Yes. Wow.
I mean, also, did you get sucked into a guy in the 20s?
Well,
there was a guy.
For you, there was?
Yeah.
For me, well, I was in a bad news. Okay. Well, I'd love to hear more about that. We're going to talk about boys anyway, so we'll use that as a segue. But my 20s... The middle, like pretty much my early into my late 20s, I had like a 5-year relationship with someone that I think is like one of the most amazing people in the world. Like and I are still friends.
That's nice.
Yeah. He actually does a lot of like design for Sketchfest stuff, because he was with us his name is Chris, at the very beginning of when we started the festival. And so he did our identity design for it.
Yeah.
And so I did spend a lot of time with in my 20s, and I feel like a lot of, I was just talking about this with someone else, like, not on the podcast, but that I feel like a lot of my aesthetics come from him, because he was so stylish, and so he's a painter and a graphic designer, and he was a DJ. And so, he was like the first guy that I was involved with where I felt like he was cooler than I was. Not to say that I felt like I was so cool. It wasn't that at all. But like I had gone out with like theater guys or like, you know what I mean? I just, brilliant, brilliant, amazing, funny writer types and stuff like that. But Chris was so, he's so aesthetically attuned, and that's he has such specific taste. And so I feel like like he was just never a guy that I was, you know how some women talk about, listen guys, I apologize for this, but hopefully the guys who listen to this will appreciate
we'll
and
like
identify.
That we
and,
are, yeah.
Yeah. And if you're, and if you're gay or if you're, no matter what, hopefully you'll be able to identify with this. But I think there is that kind of thing where girls kind of make the joke that like, sometimes there are guys that you date that you like sort of, they're like, like you get to sort of model them into sort of stylistically what you want. Like there, that's a thing, right? Yeah. It's a phenomenon. It's a phenomenon where girls are like, "Oh my god, that girl totally made that guy like attractive in his different way, or whatever that means." Like she gave him style,
like
they or whatever.
Have, like a guy that has, like you'll be like, "Oh, he has potential," or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I feel terrible saying that, but it's
reality.
Yeah. So there's sometimes there's like something that transformative that happens for a guy with a certain woman in his life,
of course, and
they sort of get their style, and like suddenly they kind of are. And girls joke about it, like I made him what he is. Like I made him, I primed him for like the women that came after me and stuff. I think I had a little bit of that, and also I was still really young. But like Chris was somebody who just. I just thought he was amazing. Like, and he fully respected me too. It was in no way was it like, "Oh my god, you're so great and I'm so dumb."
That's
he thought
good.
I was, you know, the bee's knees also.
Yeah.
But and so the stuff that I exposed to him to, he was totally loved and the stuff that he exposed me to,
he
but he was like
lovely,
the guy
actually.
That, you know, we would go to a museum and like really talk about the art. Like he wanted to talk about Mark Rothko and Mondrian, and you know, he wanted to talk about modern art and Jasper Johns, and like he would like acquaint me with all these like badass, like the sort of like skateboard graphic design, like giant robot Japanese.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The sort of
he was
that
in the cool
world.
Stuff. Yeah.
He
like
was,
cool.
He is so cool and remains so cool. If he ever listens to this, he'll tease me mercilessly that I'm going off on him this much, but he's just cool.
I get him. I get
and
exactly
I think
what you're
I
saying.
Still, yeah. And somewhere in my mind, I think I still associate his style as like the style
like
I'm
you
into.
Took
like
that
if
from that
to
relationship.
See a guy across
That's
a
right.
room, I'll be like, "Oh, that guy looks like he could be, you know, a member of like the Verve or something."
Right.
Like, look at those Clarks, look at those corduroy pants, look at like that, like sweet sweater vest
right.
and like you're dressing up but you're dressing like I'm so into that look.
Yeah,
still.
I like to think like every relationship like you take a gift from it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was what he gave you was the sort of
I mean
sense
he gave
of,
me a lot more, I hate to say that. Yeah.
Right.
But like yeah, but like there was definitely a lot that I still know I'm enthusiastic about because
yeah.
of him.
Yeah, that means, yeah.
But
That's
and I
awesome.
Can't say that so much for like people I went out with in high school and college and stuff. I don't
right.
I didn't have that kind of like awakening to certain
yeah,
cultural
I don't,
things.
I don't
you know?
Think I did either.
What was your, I want to get to the guy in your 20s, which you do
oh, God.
Certainly don't have to name by name, but what was your dating life like in high school?
Well, I dated a lot. I've actually hesitate to talk about this, but I think this
sounds
is
like you had options because you were friends
is.
With so many different people.
That is true. That maybe that's why I had so many options. But I dated a lot. There were always boys around. I mean, also like I said, my brothers had there.
Oh yeah,
it was a revolving door.
I wanted to ask if you were because it's funny. I've had a stretch of it seems like I've had a lot of girls who've grown up around a lot of guys. Like they were the only girl and like seven brothers or like their brother's friends.
Yeah.
And so were you like the cute younger sister or were they like
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I just it was like our house a lot of times was like Grand Central Station. I mean, it was like, you know, our door was unlocked. People didn't lock their doors back then.
Of course, not on Sullivan's
not
Island.
On Sullivan's
Are you
Island
kidding me?
In the '80s. Check out the Facebook page. If there's anything you can take with it. But I mean, like, it was just like a constant, moving cocktail party. I mean, without the cocktails, although sometimes there were because we were bad.
I would assume
we were bad. Yes. But that's like sort of how Charleston is, or that was back then too. It still is now. But I don't know. Like, I was boy crazy. Like from a young age.
I think
age.
A lot of straight girls were, but maybe couldn't do anything about it.
I was just boy crazy, and my girlfriends were boy crazy, and there was like I don't know. Because I was around guys all the time, like I wasn't a tomboy. I never was like that. I was always really girly.
Are there a lot of tomboys? I guess I'm now going into the archetype of like the sort of feminine Southern girl.
The feminine
too.
Southern girl. There, I never hung out with too many of them, but they were around. But yeah, I think there was a lot of like girls that, you know, did that whole like debutante thing, and I went to mixers, like I went to dances, I went to like every dance. I went to every dance at every school I was in and also other schools around town because I was always like somebody's date.
Yeah.
You know, and then I went to like debutante parties and then that's where you, like you get set up on dates for those and stuff. I was not a debutante. Like my family was a little quirkier, thank God. I mean, we were not part of that whole thing, but I went to school around that. So I ended up kind of going to, I loved it. I mean, I loved dressing up. I loved, you know, the bands. I loved like the hors d'oeuvres. And so yeah, I was nuts about boys and kind of remained that way until my 30s.
But did you get your heart? So did you get your heart stepped on a lot or was it sort of mutual or was it just like there were so many, there was a lightness to it that where it was like, nobody ever really, it wasn't like the, you know, the intensity of like the first love and then he did this and you were shattered.
I think there was intensity. There was definitely intensity, but I was in love all the time. Like there wasn't, I was a little bit of a heartbreaker. but that's not to say like I didn't, you know, have my moments where I was like, oh my God, like I can't believe.
Yeah. Jane.
Yeah,
I love this.
There was always like a drama. I mean, I don't know.
Was there ever drama of like, because it's a smaller community of,
yes,
you know, you're dating the boy that I was dating.
Yes.
And
there was drama like that.
That's my least favorite drama, yeah. I think, in the world of love.
Yeah. And I think I tried to juggle guys and that didn't turn out well. I did find like this hilarious letter. I brought some of my dumb.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I was about to say, do you have pictures of any of the dances or like what's in that envelope? She came in with a little package full of things.
I know. I found some dumb letter that I wrote my brother when he was in college, and it was like describing my love woes.
I'm begging.
I mean, this is like I will share. Okay. I'll read it to you guys. I don't know why I didn't send it to him. It kind of cracks
me up. That is funny, too, when you find something and you're like, oh, this is basically a journal entry, but that I wrote as a letter to someone else and then never sent.
Oh, here it is. Is this it?
I love it.
Oh, no, that's some kind of thing about camp or something. But yeah, like, I think there was like some, there was just drama. I mean, in a way. Oh, I should have pulled these out before so that.
How glad are you that you kept all that?
I forgot that I had this, and my mom sent me this.
Guys, I want you to know that these pages are literally yellowed.
They are yellow. Oh, this, okay, here it is. I might have to change some names to protect the innocent.
Please do. I will say that it is dated April 9th, 1987.
89.
I mean, 89.
89, but my that
bad,
does look
my bad.
April 9th, 1989. Okay. Dear Alex, hey, I don't know why I bother writing you because you're worthless. Maybe that's why I didn't send it. You never write me back. And when you call, you just sit there and don't say anything. So like, what the hell's your problem? JK.
I love it. I love you for reading this. This is already the best.
I am writing you for a reason. I've got boy trouble. I know you would never think I would have problems with a guy, but sometimes it happens.
Oh.
I actually like someone for real this time. As in, I don't like this person for a reason. I just like him a lot.
Oh my God.
Cool, huh?
So great.
Well, it's not. It sucks. As those famous words flow from the melodic Def Leppard lead singer's mellifluous voice, love bites.
Oh my God. I just found out so much about you, including, let's all take a moment to celebrate, Def Leppard and mellifluous in the same sentence.
This is insane. Okay.
If I were PFT, I would marry you based on this letter alone.
Don't you think he has a wonderful way with the words? Well, anyways, I fucked everything up. Sorry, there's an F word in here. Because I got involved with this other guy. We didn't really get involved because it only lasted one night. But theoretically, you could say that we did get involved to protect the names of the innocent. Oh, I guess I said that even then.
Well, there was a lot of espionage going on.
Yeah. I know. Well, boy one heard about me and boy two from his loudmouth obnoxious friends who, by the way, have been trashing my name unnecessarily, but that's beside the point. Well, boy one got his feelings hurt along with everyone else like me because now he kind of wants to put things on hold until he sorts things out. But I want to ask him to junior senior because there's no one else special enough to ask, but I don't think he'll go and I'm scared anyway. Oh, well, I fucked it up. Drama.
Oh, my.
How's tricks with you? Have you gotten any leg lately?
What?
Just kidding. That was a little friend of ours names talk to make you feel at home. This summer will be fun. I want it to be like our summer's past, like with tons of our friends over here all of the time, late night food runs, and some good old beach parties to liven things up a bit. No more Ouija boards for me. I think I got really scared from a Ouija board.
Heavens to Betsy, this is fantastic.
We'll get some more Foster's and Jim Beam and skip the skip and go nakeds because this other friend of ours is a weirdo. I don't even know what I'm referring to there. What do you call a guy? This is very politically incorrect.
Okay, great.
What do you call a guy with no arms and legs in a pot of boiling water? Stew, haha. Bring some of your friends over for summer, okay?
You take a break to tell a horribly
inappropriate joke. Bring some of your friends home for summer, okay? Have you heard The Cult of Personality by Living Color? It's the best song. I can't wait to see R.E.M. in concert. Right back, you fool. Love, Janie. Okay, that's not a time capsule. And also a look into psychology.
Oh, my God. That was so beautiful. I can't believe you made references to Cult of Personality.
R.E.M. and Def Leppard.
I
had eclectic musical tastes.
The other thing I want to say is, and I know that you didn't send it, but like I do love that you were writing a letter to your brother. Even that seems somehow like uncommon. I feel like siblings.
I found a lot of letters in this packet that my mom sent me. I think there was just like a time where we wrote letters and it just evaporated almost overnight with email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, still write letters to my mom because she doesn't have email.
Seriously?
When she retired, she doesn't have a computer at home. And
so she was
just like, I'm done.
That's nice.
And she,
though.
She worked as a travel agent and she worked as, basically she worked on a computer all day, every day. And so she was
over it
that when she was done, she was done.
We still write each other letters
and it is the
liberating.
Best.
Not being glued to a computer.
Oh my God. But it's the best. And you know, those of you who never really wrote letters or who just think that like now we're two old ladies going, it's not like it used to be. But I will say that
it's a different style.
Yeah. I mean, receiving a letter from my mom, like getting a letter in the mailbox. First of all, I love my mom's handwriting.
Yeah.
I feel close to her in a totally different way than when we used to email. Because when she worked, we did email.
Yeah.
So this is like going back to old school.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a huge period of time when we did only email each other, really. She's always like written cards and stuff. But she, I love her handwriting. I love that she puts stickers on the envelopes.
Nice.
She snips out like New Yorker cartoons and encloses those clippings and
things. Do you have like a stack of all your mom's letters? Like,
I do. I have a folder that has her letters that come in and then other things that like I need to reorganize so that I have a good stack of mom letters and cards.
Yeah.
But and she takes up like if it's a card, she takes up every square inch of the card, like
this side,
turn it over all the way to the end, like mushing her signature in at the very bottom.
And you're an only child, right?
I'm an only child, and neither of my parents ever remarried.
Okay.
So my mom's close to her siblings. She's two sisters and a brother. She's really close to her two sisters, but you know, other than that, and her friends, like, and both her grandpa, you know, both my grandparents have died, and so her letters are always like super newsy, but like, you know, small town newsy. Like she'll describe the potluck dinner and what she came home with, and you know,
what the ducks
in the lake that are the little pond outside of her apartment are doing and stuff like that. And
it is so precious. That's nice.
It's so, so precious. I do miss letter writing.
Yeah, let's bring it back.
I know. I'll write you a letter.
Okay.
I loved that letter so much.
Oh my gosh. It cracks me up. Like,
but listen to you. You were a little harlot.
I was all over it.
When you meant it lasted one night, did you mean that you...
Oh, we hooked up.
Like all the way?
Yes. I'm just going to... I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was doing that. And yeah, I think so people are doing that now.
Oh, that's 100% certain.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're like a senior in high school.
Yeah.
That's not.
I didn't have normal. I didn't have. First of all, I don't know what constitutes normal anymore. And I don't know even what was normal then. I know that I waited. Did I wait? I mean, you know what I mean? That makes it sound like I made a choice. I don't ever remember making a conscientious choice
to not wait. Like I'm just telling you, like I was into boys. Like they consumed my brain and my life. Like,
did you feel so after you lost your virginity? Did you feel, do you mind if I ask how old you were?
I was 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've run the gamut. We've had people, I think, who've been 20, people who've been 14.
It's young. It's young to lose your.
I was 16.
I was just like in a hurry.
Yeah. Did you feel like
I wanted to be grown? Like I wanted to be an adult.
Yeah.
You know, like I just wanted to get it over. Like I wanted to be.
Well, it's interesting because the get it over with thing I think is so common. But it's funny because I look back and I still know the person that I lost my virginity to. And I've said that before on the podcast and he's great. And he lives here actually. But all due respect to him, there were like a couple of boyfriends that I had before that I'm surprised in a way that like I didn't with them. Uh-huh. And so that's why I'm saying like I'm interested in, I don't ever remember making a conscious choice not to have sex with certain boyfriends. And I don't really remember having the conscientious decision to have sex with the one that I did lose my virginity to. So it's interesting to me because I definitely,
it's hard to remember.
I sort of waited. It's like, it just makes you wonder, would I have done it with like one of my boyfriends that I was just terribly in love with, you know, when I was 14? Would I have done it with him if we had met when I was 16? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it was an age thing or if it was I don't know.
I was super in love with the guy I was dating in high school that I ended up, you know, losing my virginity to or whatever. And he was older. He's like 16. But I like literally thought like we were going to get married.
Yeah.
You know, like back then, because you're not thinking about yourself in the world as like there being a future. Like you are literally, I think when you're a teenager, like you are literally living in the moment.
Talk about living present. You don't have any other way to be.
Yeah. There's no sense of mortality. Yeah. There's no sense of like, oh, this thing I'm going to do, you know, like nowadays when kids like sexed or, you know, like that's going to be permanent and scar like their adult job opportunities or stuff.
I know,
like
we talked about that too on the podcast. Like, oh my God, if there had been the internet the way there is the internet now,
it would be interesting. Yeah. I just think like the way I was thinking about it was way more primal and kind of like emotional. Like I wanted that emotional completeness. I wanted that. And, you know, and I was hormonal. I'm sorry. I was a teenager. Like,
totally
I was literally exuding insane hormones, like in a way that it was almost
it's
like
so
an affliction.
Visceral. It's so visceral, and it colors so much of your experiences. And I do, and that's one of the things that I'm so appreciative about that time period too, is that I feel like all of that crackling energy and activity cements even non-romantic or non-sexual memories. It's sort of all gets kind of jumbled in there into your brain and into the feelings in your heart and the way that you hold on to memories.
Because you're so
wide
awake
that you hear
then.
From that time period, from that time, you know, from that age, whatever age that was, you know, whatever era you guys are, you know, who are listening to this are experiencing, you know, that's just so, it's so powerful.
It is. And it feels like when you're going through that time in your life and there's that sense of just being in the present, you think that that's how you're going to think about the world for the rest of your life. Like, you don't know that, like, you're going to be 30 one day and be like, oh, I should save up for a house, or you know, or like, oh, I should think about health insurance. Like, you don't think that you'll ever think that way.
And that's why parents are like, please don't let my child get a tattoo, like, not when they're 16, you know, because there is that sense of how am I not going to always feel like this.
Yeah.
Which I also think is what's so hard about it. I mean, it's wonderful to feel like, you know, this is the most important thing in this moment and it couldn't possibly matter less. It's wonderful. You know that I have, it's been a long time since I've made an Anne of Green Gables reference on the podcast, and that was something that came up very regularly by coincidence, also with guests of mine,
with Jessica Sinclair,
yeah. And June Raphael is like also loved, but the thing where Marilla says to Anne, like, "Oh God, why do you put yourself through this? You know, why are you so up and down?" And she's like, "Oh, I would rather, you know, fly on the wing, you know, whatever. But like, yeah. I would rather feel that feeling of just like being on top of the world, even if it means I have to be, you know, shattered by something, than to not feel anything." And I think that's good and bad when you're that age. And some of us are more melodramatic about our emotions anyway through the rest of our lives, as I am now.
I can't even imagine sustaining that kind of intensity of emotion for decades of life. Like, you would burn out and collapse and die. Like, I think it's important to have all those feelings then and go through it as a reference point.
Yes.
You know, because then you have that sort of,
yes,
you know, baseline to go up and down from, and then you can figure out what sanity is or something.
You're totally right. You're totally right. I think the only thing that I would throw out there that, you know, for those of you who are listening who are, you know, in college or still in high school and stuff, and I do hear from you occasionally, so I know that you're out there and I adore you, and I really feel so connected to you, is just to remind you again, you know, we talk about this all the time, but that everything that Janie's talking about, also, if you're going through something like I went through, or like Maria Bamford has gone through, or anything that's, you know, a sort of certifiable emotional illness or a mental something like that, where it does feel like, oh my God, this anxiety and depression that I'm experiencing, when you are locked into being in the moment and very present in the way that Janie just described, and it's scary and it's really hard
and exhausting
and it really does feel like I can't imagine a time when I'm not going to feel like this. Just a reminder that, like, you will not feel like that.
Yeah, I think that's important. I also think it's just a matter of faith. Like, you have to just know.
and it's like faith. And it's also like, sometimes my mom used to say this to me too, but sometimes she would say, some days she doesn't even have the faith. And then those days are autopilot days.
Right.
Where like the last thing you should be doing is then beating yourself up for not having the faith. Then it's just like,
Just take care of your needs.
Your basic needs.
Because
of
that's
going
to make you feel good. Like, you know, and maybe it is just taking a bubble bath and not speaking to anyone and listening to your favorite song or something like that. I don't know. I mean, God, I still have days like that. I'm 40 and I still have to, you know.
For sure, like, for sure. Like, but you come with this breadth of experience, to your point, where you've sort of had all of those emotions and you had the super, super highs and the super, super lows enough to sort of know that, like, there is a transience to that.
Yes.
And that, you know.
Yes.
But it is bittersweet, right?
It is bittersweet.
Like, to read a letter like that and to remember being like, I really like this person, not for a reason this time, but because I just like them. Like, what were your reasons for liking the other boys?
I had no idea. Like, because they were cool, or because they were popular, or because, like, maybe they, like, surfed. That was a big thing. Like, if someone surfed.
Okay.
Like, or they were in a band, or, you know, I don't know, like, they were the smartest one or the funniest one, like stuff like that.
And who was this character in your 20s that you lost some time to?
Oh God.
This guy who I now hate on your behalf.
He's someone that I met when I was in drama school. When I went to grad school at SMU, and we had a 5.5 year relationship. And, he was, now keep in mind, I was getting my master's degree for the entire first 3 years of our relationship. So I was very distracted.
Sure.
But he turned out to be, for lack of a better word, I mean, a sociopath. Like, he literally was leading a double life.
Oh my God.
Like, we moved to New York together. We moved to New York together, and he was an actor at the time. He's not anymore. To be actors, like, we moved there to start our careers. And the final 2 years of our relationship.
And how long were you together?
5.5.
Okay.
So for the first 3, I was in school.
Right.
And then the last two and a half, we had moved to Manhattan together, which, by the way, ended beautifully with 9/11 happening at the very height of our relationship crumbling. So it was like, it was PTSD plus, you know, PTSD, huge, emotional.
Huge.
Yeah. So he just was a pathological liar. And he was very charming. He's incredibly smart. He's had a sad life, which is like the perfect, mm-hmm. like, you know, catnip for me. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, like, there is like joy out there. Like, I know about it. I lived mm-hmm. it. You know, let me give you all of my joy. I can totally fix you. You're obviously working on yourself, you know, yeah. like, and during the New York period, he was just like involved with these other women, like, that I suspected, and he insisted I was wrong. Like, he basically gaslit me, and I felt like I had, like, so he systematically chipped away my trust of my own instincts to the point where, like, I ended up going into therapy to work on my insane paranoia. Mm. When I came to find out every single moment of paranoia that I had experienced was completely the reality, and he had twisted it in front of my eyes and made it not the reality. And I just was completely shattered by it, but also, like, I had to mourn the loss of the relationship like a death in a way, because the person that I thought I was with didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so in a crazy way, it was an easier thing to mourn, because I never wanted to be back with that person, because it was a mirage.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't be like, you know, like, yeah. oh my God. So
it's so different, right? It's such a different,
thing.
The ways in which our relationships splinter and the ways in which we have to move through those losses are so dependent on that.
The circumstances.
So the circumstances. Yes. Yeah. The difference between loving someone and having them not want you anymore and them not wanting to hurt you and being the good people that they are is so much, it's such a different kind of devastation than, yes. oh my God, I've been lied to. What does that say? And then you turn it inward. You turn it on yourself.
Like, oh my God,
this person was a monster, but I chose this monster. What's wrong with me?
How could I not have?
Exactly.
It's the craziest mind F, you know, because, and he had proposed to me a year after we moved to Manhattan. And so I was like, oh, yeah, we're just together. So, of course, you know. And I think I wasn't even ready to be married at age 27, because I ended up getting married at age 37, if that tells you anything. I still had a decade of not wanting to be married. I mean, yeah. I told you I loved men. Like, I loved dating. Like, after I got out of that relationship, I dated all through my 30s, and it was great. But,
well, you picked a good one.
I ended up landing on a great one. I'm very lucky, but at the time, I was just, I don't know why I didn't see. I think when you're with someone with that kind of an illness, because I've done a lot of reading about it, there is, you almost can't believe it can be true. Like, you almost can't believe a person can be that duplicitous.
Yeah.
So you justify it in your mind, you know?
Yeah.
So he's now married to one of the women that he cheated on me with, and they have children, and they live in town, actually, and I've been lucky enough to avoid bumping into them. However, I have, and I'm just going to say this on the podcast, and I probably shouldn't be saying it for the World Wide Web, but I keep waiting for, like, some crazy shoe to drop, like, for him to...
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big true crime aficionado, like, and I see these people, I'm like, oh, that reminds me of my ex. That guy yeah. who's lying to his wife, or who's lying, yeah. you know, I don't think he's going to do something illegal.
Unless he had some sort of revelatory, like, you know what I mean? Soul.
I wonder about people.
Searching and destroying, like, because I 100% know people are capable of change. There's no question in my mind that people are capable of change. It is hard ass work.
And I wonder about really that, though, because I don't know if everyone is capable of change.
I don't know if everyone is.
Because I think there are certain mental illnesses that are just chronic. Like,
yeah.
like, if you have diabetes, you have diabetes.
Yeah.
If you have borderline personality disorder, you have, you know.
I agree with you.
I don't
disagree with that. But I think that there has to be, I think the difference is, and this is what, you know, people like in the program would say, is
yeah.
like, you have to be aware. Like, your eyes have to be open to what you're doing and what it's doing to other people.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll never change.
If you're narcissistic,
yeah, if you can't see that, or that's part of your disease, and no one ever gets through to you,
I wonder about
then
that.
I don't know either.
Yeah, because it's almost like that's the disease. Is like not
the disease is the inability to ever know what you're really doing.
What the consequences of
to
your
even be able to change it.
But I don't know. I mean, it also sticky. his particular personality quirks could have been like just clinical depression, and maybe he's being medicated now. And you're right, and there is some sort of self awareness. However,
but I also feel like if he, but I also feel this, which is that I think that if he did he ever come back to you and say, "Oh my God, like what I did was unforgivable," then to me that's like then it's done, because I think that anybody who does something like that, if there's no point of reckoning where they come back to you, and I'm not talking about like someone in a like steps a process step, anything. Yeah. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about like anybody healing wakes themselves up to their shit.
Yeah.
You're compelled to, I think people are compelled to want to apologize
I agree.
To someone that they loved if they hurt them. I don't think it has any, it doesn't have to have anything to do with any kind of a steps process. It can just be somebody who's like, I've heard people in my life, and it is so important to me that they know
that you are aware
that I am so sorry. Yes. You know what I mean? Just for my own.
That's why I'm wondering about him as a human being occasionally. I don't think about him that much. Because I have a life now, obviously. But
sure.
I do wonder about that, because at the time when it was all going down, like the crazy drama of that breakup and being in Manhattan post 9/11, you know, he was like, I'm a horrible person. And almost like that was the justification for it. Yeah. Like, well, I'm just a damaged person. And so I hate myself. I'm not worthy. Da, da, da. And it wasn't an apology to me, because it wasn't like saying, I'm worried about your feelings in this. It's like saying, like, I'm the victim in a way, you know? And it's like, you're not a victim. You are the
perpetrator. Yeah.
Like, you have derailed a lot of people's lives here. And, you know, like, my family took him in, you know, like,
When it ended, was it because you finally found out? Or was it because you found out after the fact? Like, it ended between you and then you found out that you'd been right?
We were planning the wedding, and he got cold feet and he wanted to take a break. And I said, okay, he moved a block away because we shared a dog. Then when 9/11 happened 2 weeks later, I think because that was such a jarring and terrifying experience, and he was seeing someone this whole time that we were trying to work things out, the girl that he was seeing was like, you have to tell her, you have to tell her, who I'm friendly with now, actually, because we're like war buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
But because she contacted me years later to warn me that he was moving out here and told me her whole story, which is a whole other story. But so he just came clean. He just, like, one night, I thought we were getting to talk back to like, to talk about our relationship, because it was such a horrific time of fear and, you know, apocalyptic,
sure,
you know, whatever, because, like, we'd just been attacked, like a terrorist attack, and he basically just told me everything. I think he felt pressure from his current relationship to spill it, and I was like 100% shocked in the moment. But also, like, this explains everything. I'm not crazy. Like, there was a sense of weird relief of like, you're like, oh, okay. So that time, you know, when, you know, like, I found that receipt or whatever. Like, it was a sense of validation and also just complete shock, because I trusted this person and I brought him into my family. Like, my family trusted. That's the worst guilt ever. Of course, they were amazing about it.
Of course.
You know, and completely forgiving. But you just feel so guilty because you were conned.
Isn't that so fascinating?
And you're supposed to be smart.
I know. It's such a weird...
You think, you know...
It's such a weird... You're right.
It can happen to anybody.
Fuck. It's such a weird... Like, yeah, it's what we've already said, that the idea that the difference in the way you have to mourn something and the way... There are so many different ways for us to be hard on ourselves.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I would, like, if you have your heart broken by somebody that you still have on a pedestal, then you're just going to beat yourself up for not being good
and
enough.
And wish that you were with that
person. And then if you're, you're left by somebody, or you find out that somebody's a horrible person, then you're going to be shitty to yourself about not knowing better. Like,
yeah.
Let's give ourselves a break, God's sake.
And I'm able to.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I went through stages of grief or whatever.
Of course, you know. Did.
It's just, you know, I think the lesson was to, like, if you have, if something doesn't feel right,
yeah,
then it's not right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if it feels wrong, it's wrong. And don't try to justify, don't listen to the outside voices, because that's the voice, that was a loud and strong voice, his voice of saying that, no, it's right. It's right. I love you so much. You're my life. You're my this, you know, like just constant manipulation, you know? And if that person is so, like, he was a really needy, emotionally needy person, there was no room to hear the noise in my own head, because it was all his voice kind of brainwashing me, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't believe he loved me. I think he loved that I loved him, and he used me.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how. I don't know. I mean, like I said, I have definitely done things to people that I'm not a
so
monster.
Have I.
And I know, you know what I mean?
I've made mistakes,
yes. but I
had remorse. There's a difference.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I conscience. Think that's ultimately, you know, this is something that I talk about with friends a lot, I think, is that it ties into the idea of listening to that voice, but it's the idea of, like, being, I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast, sorry, but the idea of, like, being selfish at the right times instead of being selfish at the wrong times.
Right.
Like, if you don't take care of yourself and you're always worried about how someone else is doing, ultimately we are human beings, and ultimately we will still protect ourselves in ways we're not even aware of. So if you're not listening to those voices, it might come out in a way that you would never want it to come out. Like,
yeah,
if you're being hurt in a relationship in a way that you don't understand or you're not willing to look at, you might end up hurting that person back by cheating on them or by being unavailable. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but those are normal human.
Yeah.
Mistakes.
I mean, this obviously,
which
is, like,
I agree.
A very specific.
I agree with you. I mean, I think there's a line that it crosses, I think, when, I mean, also,
I mean,
like,
the fact that he was willing to watch you think you were crazy, the fact that he was willing to create. I'm glad I've squeezed one burp in during the podcast. Thank God I worked that in. We almost got all the way through. But the fact that, like, he was able to watch you disintegrating into this place of you thinking you were crazy.
Yes.
You not being able to get the love from him that you needed and feeling like you were crazy and paranoid,
like,
and going to therapy.
That. Yeah.
That is dark shit.
That's really dark. It is so dark that it blows my mind that he has a woman in his life.
That's not love.
I
can't
feel sorry
love
for
you can't
her.
Truly love someone and watch them do that to themselves and
feel,
be responsible
yeah.
for it.
No, he's never apologized. Never. I think he's literally incapable of feeling shame. I think he's a shameless person.
God, that's so stunning.
Yeah, and there are people like that. There are a lot of people like that in Hollywood that I've encountered.
It probably attracts that kind of. There's a certain metal that you can have, M-E-T-T-L-E, guys, that borders on being a sociopath, that I think can
I've read
can
about
sustain
it.
People can sustain that here
and be rewarded financially
way,
yeah
in a darker way than there might be room for in the rest of the world. I gotta pick up the lightness of this because we are over an hour. I would like to do is maybe play one of the this is a surefire way to lighten it up, which is to play a couple of little games.
I just have
to remember where I put my
your
book
game
for
stuff?
A second. Yeah. I'm going to put the mic down. It's probably going to make a loud, obnoxious sound. And Janie, you can entertain people while I quickly
okay.
look for it, because I'm unprofessional and didn't pull it out beforehand.
Well, I just want to say that I'm having a nice time on this podcast. And I'm drinking an organic apple cider vinegar all natural drink that Janet gave me that I'm really enjoying.
It's really good, right?
Maybe you'll get a sponsorship. Made by Bragg. By Bragg.
Super excited.
She's into that. She's.
I would be very excited. I can't imagine. I've never even delved into this
Paul
sponsorship.
Paul C. Bragg.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Dr. Bragg.
Heads up, Dr. Bragg.
He is a PhD.
I do drink these a lot.
He's a life extension specialist.
I do not drink kombucha, so this is really the
closest
thing.
This is like your kombucha.
Yeah. Let's take you back to, you know what? It doesn't, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be what you would have picked. It can be a combination therein.
Okay.
But we're going to play MASH.
Do I know how to play that?
Mansion, apartment, shack, house. Did you ever play this?
It's three guys
that you would marry. Three cars that you would drive.
I vaguely, you're going to talk me through this though, right?
Yes. So basically it's like, is this something you would play when you were a kid? If it's something you played when you were a kid, you might be like, I want to be married to Michael J. Fox, Kirk Cameron, and Corey Haim.
Okay.
It could be like, this is, you know, what little Janie would have wanted, or it can be like, silly fantasy world of today, like who your three guys on your
maybe
list.
Maybe I'll blend it.
You could pull an Alex P. Keaton. You could throw a Clive Owen in there. I mean, it's totally up to you.
Okay.
And so I'm going to ask you for different categories, and you're going to give me three options. And at the end, we'll, by a process of elimination, we will tell you how your life ended up with this in this fictitious world.
Okay,
with
these I'm ready.
Different cars and jobs and things that you have.
I'm totally ready.
So let's start it with. Some gentlemen. Who are three guys that you would like to marry?
Okay. I'm going to go back in the recesses because it just amuses me.
Right.
Would not want to marry them today.
Yeah.
Roger Taylor, the drummer from Duran.
Oh my God. Hilarious. His name is Roger Taylor?
Well, there was John Taylor.
Yeah.
Who created Duran Duran. Oh, Nick.
The gayest
Nick Rhodes.
One. Nick Rhodes.
Yeah.
He always had the most makeup on and looked the most like a girl. And I just couldn't have loved him more. Right.
Okay, so
Roger Taylor, the drummer. I like it because it seems like you picked one that you might actually end up with. Like, oh, I don't want to compete with the other girls for Simon.
But I don't know why. But Roger, he was like the swarthy one or something. I think I had a thing for that.
The swarthy one. Okay, Roger Taylor.
Okay. C. Thomas Howell was obsessed with The Outsiders.
I love it.
Totally obsessed, you guys. And I think I also liked Ralph Macchio.
Oh, this is great.
I had posters of
the original Karate Kid.
Listen, all of those guys I just mentioned had posters of them in my room.
I couldn't love this
from
more.
Tiger Beat.
This is fantastic. Okay, three cities that you would want to live in.
Okay, so then I'm going back in time.
Yeah.
Definitely New York. I was obsessed with New York City.
Love it.
Charleston, because I still am connected to Charleston. Great. And even though I had never been, I was obsessed with Paris, like visiting Paris and anything French.
I still am.
Me too.
Still am. There's a reason that people love that city. Yes. It is the best city in the world. I'm sure many people will argue with me on that. But okay. You know, we've never done this before. What about like if you could speak a language, like three languages, a language that you would be fluent in?
I would have loved, I did take French, so I wish I could speak French fluently. I also wanted to speak Arabic. I'm half Lebanese and of course, the French thing is they speak that in Lebanon too. So if I could speak French and Arabic,
I love where this is going. Which parent is Lebanese?
My father.
I'm sorry, we didn't get to that, everyone.
Oh, it's not that interesting.
French, Arabic,
and Spanish.
Great,
because everyone should speak Spanish.
Great, love it. Three cars, a car that you would want to drive.
Okay, I know like back then I would have wanted a Carmagia.
Oh my God, love it.
I mean, right? Pretty in pink?
Yes. I feel like I said that a lot. I feel like I said...
Carmagia was like, that was everything.
Probably like a... What's another one that's like that? My dad used to have one. It was on a Carmagia. It was like a... Not an Aston Martin. Something else. But anyway, go ahead.
I think an Alfa Romeo probably.
Yeah,
that would have been one for me.
Let's
Alfa Romeo.
In.
And then probably like a rabbit convertible because there was like this beautiful girl in town that had one and she always looked great in it. It was white.
Number of kids.
Oh, well, that has changed over the years. I would have said maybe back in the day two, but now I'm sort of a zero.
Sadly, you have to pick one more. I just put 2-0.
Then I had to say one.
Great.
Because never more than two.
Me too. I was always like 0-0, 0-1, 1-2.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's another fun thing that I can come up with that I haven't done before? Well, let's do like a job that you would have.
Okay. Well, I definitely actress, which luckily I've pursued in my life, but
that
was something I wanted to do then as well. Mm-hmm. I was sort of interested in politics. still am. So I would a lobbyist would have been another one for like some great cause.
Yes. Okay.
Or a union organizer. These are just things I wanted to do and still haven't.
This is very cool. How about a talent like a musical or artistic talent that you would have wanted that maybe you didn't necessarily
singing.
Have?
Singing. That is like my I still pine for that. I even had a dream last night where I sang in front of people and it was not good and I just like it hurt my heart.
I thought you were going to say you had a great dream where you were singing in front of a crowd.
I think what it made me realize is I should just take lessons, but I still like you had to have a little bit of like
you never know
tone or something. I don't know.
You never know.
You never know. It is a muscle. Definitely singing, playing the piano. I love piano music. And another talent, let's see, what would that be? Being able to zing people immediately.
Zingers! That's the best. Oh my God, I'm hoping I can orchestrate this so that you get zingers.
I'm always the kind of person that's like, I should have said that in the moment.
Zingers, that might be the best MASH answer in the history of this game.
And maybe I could sing them too.
Oh God, singing zingers. She's a great zinger. Here's one I've never done. A decade, like you go back in time and you live in the 20s. So you go back in time and you live in.
Okay, I like the 40s a lot, even though there's World War II, but I love that whole like the drama.
We'll just take it's the best of whatever era.
Okay.
It's the best of whatever era. It's the best of the 40s.
You know, the 60s are intriguing to me. Because of psychedelics.
Mm-hmm. Great. Me too.
I've been sort of like intrigued by that. Mm-hmm. I'm so like 20th century. I'm not like, I don't have like a, I don't want to, I don't want to go back into hardships. I like conveniences.
Janie Dodd, not into hardships.
I guess I'd have to say the 50s because that's when conveniences really,
I love
like
this.
Appliances and stuff.
Okay. So. Tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
I secretly did. I was doing them before I told her to tell me to stop. I have 11. I'm pausing it, guys. When I come back, we're going to reveal
have
the future.
Yes.
Okay, guys. We've got our answers. First of all, I want to know that I really feel your pain on this because when I would end up living in a shack...
Uh-huh.
I felt so sad.
That's
like
what I
it
got.
Was a real letdown.
I'm
you
okay
are
with...
living in a shack. But this is the thing. Your shack is in Paris, France.
Oh, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
So
do
you're
it.
Living in a shack in Paris. You speak Arabic.
Oh, fantastic. That's useful.
It's the 1960s. This is starting to come together.
Actually,
it's
very bohemian.
It's 1960s Paris. It's a bohemian shack.
I love
it. It's fabulous. You speak Arabic. You're a singer. You can sing.
I'm so
beautiful
happy.
Singing voice.
I'm happy.
You have a rabbit convertible.
Oh, perfect.
In the 60s. I guess it's like a Volkswagen convertible.
Yeah,
it's like Volkswagen. A bug. You have a convertible bug driving around Paris, speaking Arabic to everyone you meet, going back to your hip bohemian shack. Whip. You're an organizer, a union organizer, which is so Parisian.
I love it.
It's so Parisian.
It is labor
you don't
force.
Have any kids.
Perfect.
And you're married to Ralph Macchio.
No, that's the one night. That's the. Oh, no. No, if only it had been. Roger Taylor would have been
Roger
the best
Taylor's
match
the
for that.
Roger Taylor's the one that fits for that life. But unfortunately, you got stuck with the Karate Kid.
Oh, my God.
Listen, Janie, you are the one who put him on that list.
I'm in Paris and I speak Arabic. I think I'm going to. I think I might rise
above. I love the story of 1960s union organizer with no. Of course, you don't have time for kids. You're a union organizer.
I know. I've got. And I'm singing at night.
Oh, my God. This is a great.
The
world.
Paris clubs at night.
Yes.
The shack is totally manageable in the beautiful
city of Paris. Oh my God,
it's
so cool. It's like a super cool
shack
little...
in New York City would have been
it's
bad.
Like a hip it's like a hipster shack. It's like a it's probably you know what it's probably like an atelier. It's like we live in like the it used to be like
a writer's garret.
It's a garret. It's a garret. It's like the guy who used to tend
Victor
to the garden
Hugo
outside on
lived
the roof
there once
and
or something.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm down.
And it leaks when it rains, but like you just put a bucket under.
You guys, I just will have to learn to love Ralph Macchio because
he's got a heart of gold.
He didn't stay sexy throughout his adult.
We're talking about.
And we
about,
could also argue maybe he wasn't sexy as a young.
He was adorable.
He was like yes, like you would have taken him to a
dance. Yeah. Listen, this is
take
okay.
Take him to dance.
I'll guarantee you he supports you in all of your causes.
Okay. Well, that was fun, though.
That was really cool. I'm so glad that worked out. And then we'll do one last thing.
Oh, fun.
Which is we'll do a cootie catcher question because Victoria that's made this those? Amazing. I didn't know that either.
That's it not is something we that comes them. Up.
I don't think we even had a name.
We might not have had a name either, but... Also, that's like a fancy one.
I know Victoria. When Victoria printed this out for me, so it's like a special JV club.
Okay,
one.
Red.
R E D. Now you pick a number in there.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and another number.
2.
Okay. 2 is what are 3 differences for better or for worse from your teenage self? Please note the JV Club logo that she printed on the inside of the cookie catcher. I know. It's
what
like
are 3 differences for better or worse from your teenage self to me now?
Mm-hmm.
Like now, I think one of the main differences that we discussed earlier is that tempered emotional experience,
yes.
Being able to experience the highs and lows of a daily life without it being completely off the seismic charts.
Huge.
So that's one, because I'm a woman now and yes. I don't go on that roller coaster ride, which is nice.
Agreed.
Another difference would be, as I was like mining through my old stuff, like not that many differences in a weird way. Like I'm still the same person. I like that. Oh, confidence. That's a huge difference. I was constantly doubting myself.
Me too.
Because you're just coming up in the world and you feel beat up by it and you don't feel like you have a voice yet. So I think I'm still working on that daily, like confidence thing.
Me too.
So luckily that gets better when you get older. And then, I'm married. I was not married. Not married back then.
That's just a fact.
Thank God.
That's a cold, hard fact.
Don't get married young. If you are listening to this, I say don't get married young. Live an awesome life.
Because like, when you made your decision, you knew, like, I've been there. I know what's out there. And
I felt
this person is the one.
Like, convinced. Like, because I knew who I was. And I was marrying someone who knew who he was. And so I just like my mantra. Like, I mean, my parents, also I come from a divorced, as I said, divorced household. And my mom and dad married when they were young.
Yeah.
And now they're both happily married to other people. And they, you know, they got married a little older the second time around. And I think that's a good lesson.
I agree. God, this was so much fun, Janie. What a joy.
I know.
What a total
You know I love
pleasure.
Seeing you. I missed your face. I hadn't seen you in a while.
I know. It's been crazy. This is like the only time I get to socialize with people is doing the podcast, because at least I know I have to get an episode out every week.
Right.
So then it becomes like, I've got to make this happen so I get to see my nearest and dearest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This was such a joy.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Such a joy. Tell everyone anything you want, including your podcast, anything you want people to check out.
I have a podcast called Janie and Aaron Does Hollywood. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, and it's me and my best friend, Aaron Ginsberg, who's a television writer, and we talk about daily life and kind of, it's like a conversation.
He's so fantastic.
He's really fun. It's a real positive listen. It's only
He's one
minutes.
Of the creative forces behind the Thrilling Adventure Hour, for any of you who are familiar
yes,
with
that. Yes, that is true. He works on Thrilling Adventure, and he also is working on a new NBC show called Do No Harm, which comes out in 2013. I am on Regular Show, which is a Cartoon Network show. We won an Emmy this year.
Yay!
So if you like cartoons, it's on Monday nights. It's a great show.
Get
I play
it,
the
guys.
Character of Margaret. And that's the only thing I have to plug off the top
that's
of my
fantastic.
Head. Watch Regular Show, listen to my podcasts. Oh, and if you Google me, you can find some funny web shorts I might be coming out with soon.
Love it. I love it. We love our Janie. And guys, we love you. So thank you so much for listening. We are going to talk to you next week on the podcast. And by we, I mean probably not Janie. That would be weird if all of a sudden
if
she
I'm
was
the
on
permanent
every podcast.
Guest, no.
But
how many times can I talk about my adolescence?
It turns out I can talk about him now like 40. So it just keeps going. Guys, you're the best. Talk to you soon. Bye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.